Namaste. We were talking yesterday about the ego. I said that the ego is centered in the medulla oblongata. And this is why they say that when people are egotistical, they look down their noses at people. It's because there's tension in the back of the head, drawing the head backward. Now, this is a very important point to keep in mind, because the more intelligent you are, the more the energy rises. Intelligence means energy rising to the brain. Stupid people have very little energy there. You ask them a question, oh, I don't know. Bright people, you can see it. It's brightness that leads people. There was a friend of mine was talking about a team of dogs. Well, you can see it, any pack of dogs. It isn't the big, tough one. It's the little intelligent one that leads the pack. And so intelligence is what leads in this world much more than physical strength. Now, the more intelligent you are, the more energy goes to the brain, as I said. And if it's caught here by egotism, that can create great mental disequilibrium. People who are highly intelligent and allow that intelligence to go to their heads, they get confused. They come up with wrong answers. This is part of the problem of science. They have tried to get everything just by intellect. Without the heart, you can't understand. When I was a child, I used to understand this truth, and I used to play games with myself just to convince myself, because I did have a good intellect, but I wanted to convince myself that this intellect could play me false as well as true. So I would use little tricks like telling my mother, oh, don't give me spinach, mother, that's the color of envy. Do you want me to become envious? And I knew that I was having fun. I knew that it wasn't valid. But I used many ways to convince myself that the intellect was not going to give me the truth I was seeking. And in fact, I did become much too intellectual, and I had to work hard to develop devotion after I met my guru. But devotion is the only way. You'll never find God if you just can intellectually put the pieces together. It's when you love. It's when you feel devotion in your heart. It's when you have longing for that truth that you will be able to find it. And so the whole Bhagavad Gita is really summed up in the last chapter after lots of very deep and intellectual arguments, the philosophical, theoretical, but not really theoretical, because it's all based on true insight. Nonetheless, at the end, he says, leave all of that, just love me, love God. That's the only thing. And so as I talk here, I want you to understand that to really understand what I am saying, you must open your heart to it, not just your brain. Don't try to puzzle it through, because the brain will never get you there. The brain is a tricky customer. It's a dangerous weapon. It can cut you, or it can lance the boil of ignorance, either one. It's only when you feel in your heart, yes, this is the way, then. I know when I read Autobiography of a Yogi, it was so completely counter to everything I had ever believed or known. I knew nothing of Hindu philosophy. I knew nothing of dharma, yoga, reincarnation, karma, nothing, nothing. I'd never even heard of all those things. When I read that book and I found on page 8 or 9, Lahiri Maharshi materializing in a wheat field, for some reason, I knew it was true. When my mother had tried to talk to me of saints and their miracles, I said, come off it, mother, that's just ridiculous. I couldn't believe that stuff. And yet, when I began thinking and trying my intellect with my reason, with my heart feeling, take me to the point where I knew the only thing I wanted in life was God. And I had thought to become a hermit, and I had thought to go off to South America, to the Brazilian jungles, and maybe spend my life there in meditation. But then the thought came to me, who has ever heard of anybody seeking God? I didn't know anything about the lives even of Western saints. And I thought, maybe I'm going crazy. But in the end, I had to decide that if I'm going crazy, I have to go crazy. But this is the only truth I can see. And so when I read Autobiography of a Yogi, I have to say I didn't read it as an intellectual game. I read it in desperation. I needed what he had to give me. And when I read all those miracles and things, I thought, well, I couldn't understand them. I couldn't justify them. I couldn't see any reason for them. But my heart was so completely convinced of the truth that he was talking about that I just put all those doubts on a shelf. I took the next bus from New York to Los Angeles, 4 days and four nights by bus. And when I met him, when I met Paramahansa Yogananda, my first words to him were, I want to be your disciple. And in nearly 62 years, I have never had a moment doubt on that subject. I have known, but what convinced me was the heart. Now the ego is the greatest obstacle. Well, let me go back a little bit. There are four aspects of mind, aren't there? Mon, buddhi, ahankar, chitta. Mon means the mind. Buddhi is the intellect. Ahankar is the ego. Chitta is the heart. Many books speak of the chitta as the lower aspect of consciousness. That doesn't do. It's the intuition, the heart feeling, that which helps you to know this is right. If you see a cloud of dust on a hill, you don't know if it's kicked up by dust from a wind or something, or a fire and smoke. You don't know which it is. Intuition would tell you. Intuition, if it's true, can never guide you wrong. Never in any decision that you make, just consult your mind. This is why women are often, because they go more by heart, they are often more intelligent than men who go more by brain, because they go by heart, they can feel whether a thing is true. A man may take a man on as a partner, take another man on as a partner in his business, and the wife will say to him, I don't trust that man, don't take him. And he says, what do you mean? His credentials are fine, it's okay. But the man will run off with all his money after 2 years. The women knew that, the woman knew that. Men can have intuition intellectually. As they develop spiritually, they can develop both sides. You have to be both men and women if you want to become truly spiritual, and if you want to find God, you have to be equally man and woman. But that intuition of the heart is that which will show you the right direction. Now, mon is the mind. There's an interesting story on that one. When my guru was a young man, he came to the Maharaja of Kashim Bazar. He said, I have a school in Dihika, in West Bengal, but the children are getting malaria. And the Maharaja said, but aren't you all yogis? You shouldn't be getting malaria. And my guru said, when a mother was once feeding her child who was very weak from hunger, and he took one bite, and she said, my son, are you getting stronger? And the son said, I don't know, mother. The food hasn't reached my stomach yet. So he said, these children are taking yoga, but they're just practicing it. I have not got malaria. I've been practicing it. So the Maharaja was satisfied with that answer. And then he said, but you're going to be starting a school in which you're teaching people spiritual truths. I would like to test your knowledge. So he called in a bunch of pundits, and they were all ranged there. Master, my guru, looked at them. He said, I could see that they were all ready for a theological bullfight. So he said to them, look, let's talk about things we have realized, not just what we have read. Reading, book knowledge, that isn't wisdom. But we read in the Shastras that the four aspects of mind, mun, buddhi, ahankar, chitta, have their corresponding relation in the body, their corresponding centers in the body. Can you tell me where each of these aspects of mind is centered? Well, he knew that's not told in the Shastras, and these book-learned pundits couldn't answer him. So he said, mon is here at the top of the head, the Sahasrara. Buddhi is the intellect. It's centered in this point between the eyebrows. Ahankar is centered here. Chitta is centered here. And so what you find in the Mahabharata, that Dhritarashtra is blind. This is all symbolic. He is blind because he represents the mind. And let me explain it with the illustration that my own guru, Swami Sri Yukteswar Giri, gave. He said that a mirror will reflect a horse. Now, it doesn't define that horse. The horse is merely reflected there. It's the intellect that comes in and sees it and says, oh, that's a horse. But you're still not caught in delusion with mind and intellect. Then comes the ego, and the ego says, oh, that's my horse. Well, even that isn't complete ego, complete capturing or bondage to ego, to maya. But then the ego comes in, the feeling comes in, citta, and he says, oh, how happy I am to see my horse. And there is the beginning of maya. We see something outside, it doesn't catch us, it doesn't delude us. But as soon as we say, oh, that's a sunset, fine. Well, that's today's sunset. My sunset, you can see, even say, because it's off the porch of my terrace in my house in the mountains. All right. But when you say, how happy I am to see that sunset, you become caught. Now, let me add a little codicil to that little statement. Certain desires in this world, they can be satisfied in the astral world. Desires for physical beauty, like scenery, sunsets, that sort of thing. Beautiful music, uplifting music. These are more beautiful in the astral world and can be satisfied more and more completely in the astral world than they ever can be in this world, where you may watch a beautiful sunset and then get ants here and mosquitoes here and flies here and all those worldly distractions. The worldly desires are what keep you coming back here. And the reason you have to come back here is that desire directs energy. I desire that food, I desire that beautiful woman, I desire that job, I desire that money. Energy goes outward. In the astral world, they don't have those satisfactions. You might desire to drive your car. They don't have cars in the astral world. And so that subconscious desire needs to be fulfilled here, where cars exist. Cigarettes exist here, they don't exist there. You have to be reborn to satisfy that desire. So we must get rid of our desires. And the reason you see me dressed in blue today instead of orange, my name was Swami Kriyananda, but I have changed to Naya Swami Kriyananda, because I have started a new Naya Swami order, an order that emphasizes not the things that we must give up, but the very ego that clings to those things. It isn't enough to give up this, this, or this. You have to give up that thought that wants that. So the essence of true renunciation is not negative, it's positive. We are samadhi-oriented, not maya-oriented. Well, I don't want to go into that one in detail right now, but the issue is that when the intellect comes in and sees that that's a horse, the intellect defines things, it explains things. You need that intellect, but the intellect doesn't yet give you your consciousness. As I said, a computer can give you very good explanations for things, reasons for things, answers to questions. It can't give you more than it's programmed with. No computer could ever come up with the kinds of questions we're asking on this show. No computer could ask you, why am I living? Why am I here? Is there a God? Is there something higher? That takes citta also to come into it. There is that aspect within us, you know, Swami Shankaracharya explained. When Buddha came and taught that you must stop doing karma kanda only, and thinking that by certain ceremonies and yagyas and havans and so on that you will attain anything, you will never attain moksha. You will never attain true salvation. You will only be able to go to swarg, to heaven, for a while, and then you'll have to come back here again. Karma kanda is not liberating. You have to do the work. Like a friend of mine from Bengal one time said to my guru, that the thought of the ego, he was saying, you are God because you are one with him. And Master said that the ego isn't God. You can't say that the wave is the whole ocean. You have to say he is God. Yes, but you're the ocean itself. He said, but you're talking to the wave. Anyway, Master finally ended up, because Debbie was very stubborn and wouldn't back down on anything. So Master said, all right, we can put it this way. He who is one with God, he who says he is one with God isn't God. He who says he isn't God. Leave it at that. But the thing is that this ego, which Debbie was talking about, is the real stumbling block on the spiritual path. And this is what we must overcome. Now the mind, Dhritarashtra, is blind. That's why Dhritarashtra is depicted in this show as blind. Sanjaya is discrimination. His center is here. And it's Sanjaya who explains to Dhritarashtra, who doesn't understand what he's seeing, the whole story. You see, it's a very wonderful allegory. The scene of battle of Kurukshetra is far away, but Sanjaya, he has distant vision, and he can see what is happening in the battle. But the interesting question is asked, not what are they doing? This is what the normal thing would be. Dhritarashtra should be asking Sanjaya, what are they doing right now? But he asks the question, what did they do? He puts it in the past tense. Sanjaya stands for introspection. And introspection comes after each battle, after you've had your struggle with delusion, with food, with desire for fulfillment, success, etc. You look back and say, each day you should say this, my good side and my bad side, the Pandavas and the Kauravas, which side today won in the battle of life? This is a question to ask yourself every day. Well, have I won the battle today? Every day is a battle of Kurukshetra. And so Sanjaya is that which looks backward and says, well, this is what happened. It should be, what are they doing? It said, what did they do? Joy to you.